From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello. Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. If you are a longtime or habitual listener, first, thank you. Secondly, you know that this is our listener mail portion of the week. This is where we take a big stew of all these voicemails, all these emails, all those weird messages scrawled on our mirrors in the dark by invisible hands of your fellow listeners. We share them with you. Today we've got some great stuff. We've got some stuff about a Mattress Firm update that we were not expecting. We've got, I think, a very well-intentioned series of questions about Parler, and we've got some mind-blowing stuff about the nature of reality, if we want to be pretentious about it, and the Latitude Society. So off mic, folks, Matt and Noel and codenamed Doc and I, we usually spend a few minutes shooting the breeze before we get into this and talking about how we feel we should order these things. We do our best to make it feel like a cohesive, coherent thing, not too many downers, not too many uppers, I guess, either. But Matt, this correspondence you received, I think we all agreed this was something that was worth responding to. What do you think?
Oh, for sure. Two things. We all received it, Mr. Bolin. But second thing, paramount to any discussions on order of how we're going to do this is that we are all really hungry and want chicken wings from the local. If you're in Atlanta, go to the local, for the love of God.
Get to the local.
The local has done so much for our show. We know everyone who works there. It's the pandemic days, so we don't get there too often. But back in the day, I would say, without hyperbole, we did some of our best brainstorming at the local. I don't know if we all remembered all of it. The next day.
I'll tell you what I do remember, though, is dry rub lemon pepper wings.
No. Sun-dried tomato.
That's the one. Dry rub, sun-dried. Thank you. Sun-dried, dry rub. But this time, if I do this crazy thing that I'm contemplating doing after we record, I'm going to do half dry and half wet. Whoa.
Go for it. Who's going to stop you?
All right.
Carpe diem.
Yeah, carpe diem. Oh, we're so hungry. Oh, yeah.
Wait, one more thing, though, because we are talking about a place that we all love and miss dearly, including codenamed Doc is in on this, too, also a local fan. I do want to point out, you guys, that some of those folks do listen to this show. And I know that because pre-pandemic, when it was like our happy hour spot, every so often, one of our friends who works there would come in and like talk trash to us if we had not done well on an episode.
Slap us around a little bit even.
Well, it's good. It's
snarky cheers.
Real world iTunes reviews in real time. I dig it. So speaking of a kind of review, that's what this next message is, but it's coming from a very good place, and I think it's worth us all contemplating it. So we're going to do that together now.
Hey guys, long time listener. Love what you do. Love your stance. I will say that I feel like, and I'm not supportive of anything that happened in the Capitol. I think it was horrendous to the U.S. government. It was a slap in the face geopolitically. But I feel like the commentary and discussion on Parler, nor was I a member, nor do I support it, about it being a free market, belies the fact that Twitter was effectively used in a similar manner in Egypt and during the Arab Spring riots to overthrow a government. And I feel like we're in a blurry line of social media, yes, being private industry, but if you go on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you're going to see the influence of political messaging in that interlude. So to draw a firm line in one case for one platform, while at the same time numerous articles from Jack Dorsey on Twitter referring to his engagement, involvement, and basically relationship of Twitter to government and political change, I don't think that conversation was fully fleshed out enough. I love basically all that you do. I work for a fintech company. I feel like there are issues with scalability. You could go on Instagram now and find the heading of the heading. You could go find any number of racial, geopolitical, violent, gore posts because of the inability of tech companies to police their own systems of scalability. But I feel like that conversation of the relationship of pervasive influence of social media is not an accurate analogy to compare it to no shirts, no shoes, no service, because me sliding down the slide at McDonald's backwards did not have the potential to politically influence the Democratic population. Keep doing what you're doing. I love it. My two cents.
Man, I think our boy was on a jog there.
Definitely running his bottom off. He was working.
Guys, we made that point though. I have to say about the Arab Spring thing and the comparison. We would definitely discuss that angle.
We did make that point, and you know, oftentimes people will call in. Maybe you'll call in the middle of an episode, or you know, after the discussion kind of begins to kick off, and give us some input before we conclude some things, and that does happen sometimes. Well, I'm not exactly sure if that's the case here, but I think the biggest point, and I don't mean to speak for you, person who just called in to tell us this, but it feels like the biggest point here is about scalability of kind of open platforms, of like social media platforms that mm-hmm. are based on the concept of anyone being able to post anything and exercise their freedom of speech. And then so starting at that place of openness and then attempting to scale in order to make a profitable business, and the major problems within that system, essentially.
It's interesting though, because it's like, how can you, it's hard to have it both ways with the system that we currently have, where on the one hand, this is a privately owned company, you know, that has the right, it has terms of services and has the right to interpret those terms of services. And then you even have, like, I think it's Facebook that has like almost like an independent review board to make decisions so that they can kind of say, okay, we have this board that's making these decisions, so it's not just us. It's not happening in a vacuum. But at the same time, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all these companies, they are private companies that people can choose to be a part of. But caller is absolutely right. There comes a point where that genie is out of the bottle, or we cross some line and they're no longer just a private company. They absolutely have this scale of influence that's really, really difficult to control when you just treat them in that way. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, I'd go further here. So first off, Anonymous, thank you so much, man. This kind of stuff is something that I really appreciate, because these are questions made in good faith. And you're doing one of the best things an audience can do for any show, even a little show like ours. You're keeping us honest. And I appreciate the opportunity to return to this exploration. It's a Gordian knot, you know, it's a capital D dilemma. Because Parler, you're right. The way that we talked about Parler, to Noel's point, we hit some of those points you mentioned, but we also talked about the preponderance of these extremist beliefs on that network. And we talked about the problem of private entities. I will say this, by the way, I think most people would be surprised just how in the pocket of government many social media outlets are. Five Eyes never went away. You know what I mean? And while this stuff may seem like a cool, neat community to us, you know, we've got that slot machine addiction mentality. How many likes do I get on my post? We have to understand it's a very different thing to governments. Social media is a weapon, and it is naive to assume that it would not be used as such by a large state level entity with the ability or the opportunity to do so. With that in mind, Parler itself, like if you look at Parler, it doesn't bill itself as some kind of like extremist Nazi Twitter, their official stance is slash was no censorship, full stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're like the social media platform of free speech is kind of how they're positioning themselves, you know, mm-hmm. and understandably so, given what's going on with the other platforms. So they have kind of a niche they're jumping in to fill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I think we talked about this years and years ago, and it still strikes me as so true. We used to dive into 4chan when we had to get some really weird research. And 4chan is one of the best arguments against true democracy right now. Matt, I see your face there. What do I mean by that? I mean, it's government of the masses. Anyone could post, right, in theory, before a bunch of changes were made. And you see democracy, but you don't see accountability because people can be relatively anonymous. And maybe that's part of the puzzle. Maybe that's a missing piece here. Maybe there's a world where people can go onto censorship-free platforms but have to have their own identities, some sort of transparency. But then again, that's such overreach, is it not? Like, it's a crazy amount of big brotherhood.
Also, we know how difficult it is to actually prove that someone, quote unquote, incited behavior, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So at what point, where's the sniff test? Where is the like hard line in the sand, whether morally or just like contextually, of what constitutes hate speech? Like body that Facebook has employed, they determined that some posts that were flagged were in fact not hate speech. So mm-hmm. the fact that it's a question to begin with is interesting. And so it's like, to the caller's point, it's like, where is the line in the sand? How do we know unequivocally this is being censored because it's actually inciting? Because you know what I mean? Because then it mm-hmm. starts to be just about like closing off certain ideologies that are maybe less appealing to you.
That's another point. Like, okay, to the point about defining incitement. If the local gets overrun by a ravenous mob, right, chasing chicken wings, is that our fault? Because we just talked kind of in depth about how much we like the place.
We didn't tell people. Good.
Yeah, but we didn't tell people, go now.
Well,
right?
We did say, get ye to the local. We did say that.
We did literally say that. But that's a good
still, I said that, but, and I take full responsibility.
All right, Mr. Kennedy. But no, but still, at what point does the critical mass take over? You know, we planted the seed, but are we responsible for the outcome? If we mm-hmm. literally just said chicken wings are great, go get you some chicken wings right. at our favorite spot. And then all of a sudden, like if it becomes a matter of the scale of our audience, and then maybe we were irresponsible with asking our entire audience. And then all of a sudden, how are we to know that everyone would go all at once? And there'd be like a run on chicken wings.
I'm so, guys, I'm just going to pat myself on the back for making that our earlier local reference applicable. So it's not just us talking about these, again, amazing chicken wings.
I'm with you.
We are not sponsored by the local.
They smoke them. And they have all these different flavors. So good.
I do want to say too. We've been shredded a little bit in the iTunes comments for that episode. People almost saying that we're like being apologists for these rioters, and I don't think that's fair or true at all. I mean, our job on the show is to try to have perspective, to have critical thinking when it comes to these conspiracy theories and conspiracies and conspiracy facts and events, but. These are interesting questions, and it's not about whether you agree with or disagree with an ideology. The idea of where free speech begins and ends and what these companies are and represent, are they bigger than just like, you know, a independent company? They've almost become little governments of their own.
Oh, yes.
You know?
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. Damn it. We only do one strange news segment a week. There's a bill in play right now to allow private corporations to create what are called innovation zones and to take over the functions of government that would occur in those zones. Check it out now. Use Brave or your browser of choice and look at, I believe it's Nevada, innovation zones. You're right, Noel. There is a troubling difference of opinion on the role of the government or the private entities that interact with people directly. Now, I do want to point out one thing that really made me appreciate your call, Anonymous. We did not note in our previous episode that Parler did have community guidelines. They did have a mechanism for taking down posts. They were able to ban people. So it wasn't entirely anything goes. I think every social media tycoon or would-be tycoon is aware of the great example of the problem with free speech, running into a crowded movie theater, screaming fire, and then just watching the chaos happen, right? Mm-hmm. Is that free speech? Is that a crime? The problem is that free speech itself is not mutually exclusive. Like, it's not, it can be free speech and still be something that is quite dangerous and meant to be dangerous. You know what I mean?
I do.
Yeah.
No, I completely agree.
I want to bring this back to our adventures with Facebook, if that's okay. Because we've had a long relationship, the show has at least, with Facebook. And I just want to let listeners in kind of behind the screen here, behind the camera. So originally, when we started a Facebook page for Stuff They Didn't Want You to Know, it functioned very differently because of the Facebook platform and how they handled like group pages. And then I think it was like a fan page. I don't remember exactly what they called it. But generally, we could go in and see every comment that was coming in. We could personally respond to comments. We had access to that because there was such a small pool of people that were interested in our show when we first started that page. Then as it began to grow, Ben and I remember this, Ben, I remember we would struggle to keep up with some of the stuff, but we were still able to do it. And then it got out of hand to where we had to pick and choose a moment to go in and kind of search through and decide what we could respond to. Much like right now we do with our listener mail segments, we have this large pool and we dip in and we pull some things out. Then if you scale that out even further to the point where it got so big, we had to create, here's where it gets crazy, the Facebook group, which made it more manageable. And then we had to get mods for that because it got too big. And imagine doing this in this kind of scale with billions of users. And, you know, you're attempting, you kind of have to assign humans at some point to police behaviors on social media, because only a human can make those value judgments on these things. We talked about this a bit, but when it is just by the nature of the scale, it has to be done through a program, through an algorithm, policing all the content, it just becomes completely impossible to manage.
Yeah, that's the thing. So there's the human equation is quite a difficult one to crack, which may be the most inhuman robotic stuff I've said in this episode. But the problem is this, you're right. Currently, there is no way to watch every falling sparrow of a tweet, right? On any platform, there's not a real 100% considered visibility. Human beings, it is well proven, human beings will not always outsmart algorithms, will not always outsmart software, but human beings so far will always outcreate it. They'll change the game, right? Like look at the amazing and brilliant evolution of online dissent under the reign of Xi Jinping in China. What we're seeing is people couldn't type out characters that said protest. So they went to the meme world, which is a very old, I would argue, type of communication. And then when certain memes were getting stopped, then they went to other ways of communicating, a nod and a wink. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. A signal to those who were in the know. And then this language evolved from it. And the fascinating thing, by the way, Anonymous, you'll be interested in this. China just banned the audio app Clubhouse because people were going on this ephemeral audio app and they were speaking their minds in a way that I can only imagine the PRC found objectionable. Also, we're doing an episode on Falun Gong. It's really weird.
Ben is fully down the rabbit hole there, but it's good. It's such a good thing. You're going to be happy about it. It's going to have a good result for all of us.
We might not be able to get in after that one. I don't know.
Oh man. That show comes around every once in a while. I've been meaning to see it. Where I live in particular, that show comes through every year.
Shenyun, yeah.
Shenyun, baby.
I mean, there's memes of like Shenyun billboards on the moon. You know, it's almost like a running gag. They're just everywhere. Every coffee shop. They've got armies of these like street team people like putting up these signs.
We should all go. Let's make it a thing.
I've heard it's quite stunning.
Yeah, I always wanted to go, but the tickets are pricey.
Yeah.
And then there's the question of what exactly you're supporting.
What am I funding? Yeah.
Exactly. Right? Mm-hmm. But with that being said, Anonymous, we hope that we are giving a worthwhile perspective on the issues here. Social media, freedom of speech, private versus public entities, or private versus state entities. And the answer right now, as far as we can tell, is that there is no silver bullet. There is no solution to this dilemma. There's nothing that solves the puzzle in a way that makes everybody agree. You know what I mean? Like overreaching governments. Again, China is a great example. Overreaching governments, their answer is domestic stability above all. Therefore, we will shut down quick, fast, in a hurry, and with great prejudice, anything that could be a threat to domestic stability, because we are doing this for the greater good, right? And we can get into the difference between civic and economic rights versus human rights, which is a huge deal internationally. And then there's the other side, which is, you know, let's wild out. Hashtag YOLO. Say whatever you want and consequences be damned. And it appears that neither of those extremes are particularly beneficial to people at scale, to your point, Matt, over the long term. No one knows how to fix this. We built things that we don't understand, and that's the root of the problem.
Absolutely. You're correct. And that's a good place to end it. We should end it there. I unfortunately have to leave you this just because I've got a place where you can go check out some things. Go head on over to the Harvard Business Review. It's just called Harvard Business Review. You can read some really interesting opinions about some of this stuff. And there are a couple other places online that you'll be able to find if you just do some duck going about scale and disinformation. Mm. And there's this Harvard Business Review article discusses the ad revenue model with scale and what that means and how that can be abused by bad actors. And so it's what we've talked about before a little bit, but you can really get into the nitty gritty in a couple of these articles, and we'd recommend that. Okay. Thank you again for calling in. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
And we're back with more messages from you. Yes, you, the public. Are you or are you not a member of the public? That's from a movie. I don't remember which one, but I digress. We're talking about Mattress Firm. It's a follow-up from a previous Strange News or Listener Mail episode. I forget, but this one is a, if you'll recall, just a quick summary, lots of mattress firms, weirdly so. One's across the street from one another. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. We went through, talked about the business model, talked about how there was some weird, kind of sketchy stuff in the past of the parent company of mattress firm, Steinhoff International. We're going to get into that in a second. But, you know, the whole the conspiracy angle of mattress firm, it's all over the internet, is it some sort of elaborate international money laundering situation? Are all these mattresses full of drugs and or cash? That's my editorializing, but it's a reasonable question, especially given the, you know, largely moving away from showroom models with all the Caspers and the, you know, Lisas and the purple mattresses of the world. It's a little odd that there's still so many mattress firms, and we've got the inside scoop from the real estate perspective from one of the landlords of one of these rental locations of a mattress firm, and this comes from Andrew, who wrote in via email. Andrew says, hi, guys. Just listened to your recent episode talking about the mattress store conspiracy. I'm here to share a personal experience my mom encountered with none other than Mattress Firm. My mom owns various commercial real estate around northeastern Ohio. Years ago, a tenant vacated one of her properties that was on the corner of an exit ramp of a highway in a high traffic area. She decided to give the place a facelift and put it back on the market for lease. Mattress Firm approached her with something like a 6-year lease, paying above fair market value. She declined because she didn't want to deal with a big corporation. Shortly after, someone higher up at a corporate, might have been the CEO at the time, personally called her asking her to reconsider. Offering her twice fair market value was for that location. She finally agreed after all this persistence.
And all that money.
And all that money. I mean, that is literally an offer that would be very, very difficult to refuse. Mattress Firm moved in, and I mean to tell you, we never once saw a customer come into the store, as we would frequently pass that intersection, much like our two Mattress Firm locations across from each other on Moreland Avenue, a big main drag here in Atlanta. Within a year or so of being there, they abruptly called, saying they needed out of their 6-plus-year lease. Apparently, behind the scenes, Mattress Firm had been opening an insane amount of storefronts. It was alleged that the CEO was cooking the books to appear that they were much more successful than they actually were. As a result, they were forced into bankruptcy and had to cut hundreds of retail leases. Below is a link to an article that talks about this very situation. Anyway, I thought you'd be interested. You thought right. And take care. Andrew.
Andrew. Thank you so much. This Mattress Firm thing, for vivid background, it's something that Noel and Matt and I have talked about at length for a number of years. Because you know how it is when you have friends that you've known for a while. Some conversations are just conversations that kind of continue forever. You know, and you touch base on this every so often. We did a pretty good job, I think, of walking through the possibilities here. But this is, I don't know about you guys, this letter from Andrew was the first I heard about this, the CEO's shenanigans. And I believe the link you sent us is just about a little less than a year old, talking about how in February 2019, there was at least a partial make good on the fraud lawsuit. Is that correct? But not 100%.
Yeah, that's correct. Freshly removed from bankruptcy, Mattress Firm partially settles fraud lawsuit. Wait a minute. What fraud lawsuit? We didn't really talk about that last time. That's because we kind of cliff hung it. If you'll recall with, I believe, Matt, you very slyly dropped a name of Marcus Giusta, who on December 5th of 2017 resigned, citing after there were allegations of accounting irregularities. The stock price plummeted 66% and ultimately would go to fall by 90%. Yeah, apparently they had done exactly what is being described here, overstating profits and assets by nearly $12 billion.
It's a lot of mattresses.
So, I mean, Is this just crooked bookkeeping? Like, it seems like an unsustainable model. But to me, this starts to have the, like, ring of something like the Madrigal Corporation in Breaking Bad, where I'm picturing, you know, other stuff going on behind the scenes, you know, much more nefarious stuff. But that's just where my mind goes. And if that is the case, it certainly doesn't feel like they're doing a very good job of hiding it. Because, I mean, this is like, everyone and their mom questions why there's so many freaking mattress firms everywhere. But this company owns lots of other, you know, it's a holding company, this Steinhoff International. They own, you know, manufacturing facilities. They own other big box type retail spaces, mainly in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's how big does this go? You know what I mean? It's interesting too, because we can use the Parler example from earlier here. For a holding company of that size, it's fair to ask how closely they keep an eye on various subsidiaries or enterprises, you know, much less individuals. Mattress Firm itself filed lawsuits against former employees, accusing them of conspiring to make the company expand faster and further than it should. But I'm.
Well, did you see what they were doing? Maybe I missed it. I was kind of reading a bit here as we were discussing, guys. But did we talk about what their plan was? Like what those two guys were doing? Bruce Levy and Ryan Vinson. These were two real estate executives there. I can't remember if we talked about this in the last time. But
no, if we did, it doesn't quite ring a bell. Tell us a little bit more about who these people were and how they connected up with Marcus Giusta and the whole, you know, the whole collapse.
Well, and this guy, Alexander Dietich, I think that's the one that I mentioned, Alexander, that yes, rings a bell for me.
He did.
So what these guys were doing, they were doing very similar things to what our message from Andrew said. They were paying way above regular value for leases in places across the country. And they were doing it purposefully because many times the land that they were leasing was owned by a group that one or more of these individuals actually had a controlling share over, or were a part of, or were invested in some way, so that they were just cycling that money through, essentially through the lease money was actually getting back to the individuals rather than benefiting Mattress Firm in any way.
I mean, it's weird, isn't it? Because it's like the example I've always used of Target's income stream being at least partially selling security systems to other businesses. McDonald's, you could make the argument, is a real estate company that happens to give you fries if you give them a couple of bucks. The stores that we see and the companies that we see on the street level from the consumer side, we're seeing a very, very small part of a very, very large iceberg. Right. And the thing with Mattress Firm is that, like some feathered down Icarus, they flew too close to the crooked real estate sun. I'm just freestyling here, guys. Somebody stop me if I go too much farther off the rails. What we know is that despite all these massive closures that occurred, and the resignations that ensued, Mattress Firm is still around. So whatever they did,
clearly
they
did, yeah, around right. and around and around.
Right. So they definitely did not render themselves extinct, which to my mind means on some level, whatever crime was occurring worked.
Should have done a follow up. I'm assuming this listener, this deal they're talking about with the rental was back in, you know, 2016, 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And the article came out in 2019, but it's referencing this period since late 2017, the litigation. But I'm saying it sounds like this was a practice. I'm sorry, I want to ask you guys real quick. Is this like a desperate move to like bail yourself out and not like, you know, go under? Or is there something more? Is this like literally like a scam? Like, is this sort of cooking the books to like bide yourself some time in the hopes that your profits will go up and you can save the company? Or is this something like weirder?
Well, it's a bit weird. So I'm not going to say his name correctly once. Dietich, the Alexander guy. He made counterclaims against Mattress Firm while a lot of this stuff was going down. And he was saying that Mattress Firm itself, like the top executives there, were pressuring him into bulking up its real estate. So they were pressuring him to do the stuff that he was doing. The whole point, at least according to him and his countersuit, is that Mattress Firm wanted to derail competition. We talked about that in the last time we discussed this, that the strategy there was to push out any other small mattress companies that were trying to get in on Mattress Firm's territory. It's interesting to know that it's just kind of become a big shouting match at each other. Well, you told me to do this. Well, yeah, but you told me to do that.
And where does the money go?
In the mattress, man.
Dude, it really puts a new fresh spin on the famous Godfather line, taking it to the mattresses, which means going to war.
Mattresses were, fun fact, mattresses were the weapon of choice for mafias of yesteryear. They were very dangerous weapons.
It's basically like a oversized pillow fight. And I mean, those wire, you know, springs inside pack a real punch.
Well, you get the momentum, you start swinging, it's pandemonium, you know. This is still kind of an ongoing case, you know, and something we've said before, just because the news is not covering a story past the 5 minutes you hear on the evening program, doesn't mean the story ended. As a matter of fact, Steinhoff International is currently still in negotiation to try to settle another financial scandal that it was just announced. Another subsidiary of theirs called Pepcor Holdings just got one step closer in a UK court to settling a multi-billion rand lawsuit. Rand being the currency of South Africa.
And before we wrap this one up, I have to name some of the South African retail brands that Steinhoff owns, because some of these names are just adorable. And there's, you know, there's always little differences in other that I love with branding in other countries. So my personal favorite is Incredible Connection. We've got Penny Pinchers, which I'm assuming is like a Dollar Tree type situation. Something just called Pep. Don't know what that is. Russell's Shoe City, another favorite of mine, Techie Town with two K's, Timber City, and Unitrans.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, guys, I am sleepy. Is it okay if we take a nap break?
Mm-hmm. And we'll be back. The FBI is texting us.
Okay.
And we have returned. This next tale comes to us in response to our earlier episode on the Latitude Society, which was a surprising romp, I think, for many of us, right? Lucas L. writes to us to say, you asked in your latest podcast to let you know about other experiences that are like the Latitude Society. Well, they are more common than one may think. Alternate reality games, or ARG, we can call it, have been around for quite a while, and they are becoming more and more advanced. I've been part of a few, and they go way beyond cryptic web boards or a random player getting a phone call. Here are two of the bigger and more intricate ARG games, immersive theater events, I have been involved in. And you write this fantastic letter, Lucas. We're not going to, I think Matt and Noel would kill me if I read it in full.
It's lengthy, but yeah. it's very good.
So chock full out, of information.
Yes. So I'm pulling out some choice excerpts here just to give the rest of our fellow listeners the lay of the augmented reality land here. Lucas mentions the Niantic project, which was put on by Niantic Labs when they were owned by Google. And it started as a cryptic website. The backstory is really cool, very sci-fi. CERN is working on exotic matter, and then it turns into like a series of dead drops. The mobile game becomes entwined, like a mobile app becomes entwined with the overall experience, and people ran wild with it. Again, I can't think of a better comparison than Foucault's Pendulum, which, please, if you've read the book, nerd out with me about it. People were actually chartering planes to go to unreachable areas of the world to score points for their faction in this game. The game was, in many ways, Lucas points out, a predecessor to Pokemon Go. The next organization Lucas mentions here is the Experiences. This is more horror to the Niantic project sci-fi. Lucas says he mainly focuses on the Tension experience because that was the one I was most involved with. It was created by the director of several films in the Saw franchise. And Lucas says, once again, it's hard to really describe this and not be writing for hours. This ARG was about a cult that was kidnapping and brainwashing people in the LA area. It would get funds by bringing in the elderly, having them sign over all their possessions. They would also lure in and brainwash young girls. They believed in a god called Enoch. This started with a website. People would get calls from the cast. We see again this mission bleed from online to IRL in real life. And then you get literally kidnapped, tossed in a van. Lucas, you have sent us a couple of pictures relating to this. And we hope everybody reads these. I'd love to talk with you guys about these at length in the future. One thing Lucas hipped us to is that Nonchalance, right? The folks who were involved with this, Nonchalance is starting another ARG. You can go right now, folks, to Signal, SYGNYL.com. They have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the hits. Lucas also found a TikTok, but says it's currently empty at the time he was writing this. And then, Lucas, you go on to tell us about your ARG idea. And I'm going to be honest, I think it's so good that I made the decision not to talk about it on air because I don't I don't want people taking his idea, man. He worked hard on it and it's smart. It's good. We can maybe describe it in like vague terms. Would that work?
I think, yeah, maybe you're right. I just really liked it. So I want to talk about it, but a smarter move is to leave it alone. And we just have to say, please do something with it because it's super cool.
It is so great. It is killing us not to talk about it, but we would not be able to, well, I don't sleep, but we would not be able to be, to have a sense of inner peace if we told everybody how great we think your idea is and then someone took it from you. We don't want to be a party to that. Credit is important. Mm-hmm. And it's your idea. Anyway, Lucas goes on to say, you know, I'm not a wealthy guy like Jeff Hull, which is why I would have some problems doing this amazing idea. Shouts out an immersive theater, Alice Wonderland style out in New York City called Then She Fell. And then also mentions one he heard of called the Illuminati Ball, which sounds super up our alley. And then says, hope I helped you out a bit with what you were looking for. Listening for a few years now. Keep up the great work. Papa Caps is the name.
Papa Caps.
The name you want to go by. That's awesome. Dude, when we meet in real life, whether it's on a tour, post-pandemic, whatever, I'm going to call you Papa Caps. I'm just going to keep with it.
I love it.
Oh, Poppy Caps. Sorry.
Oh, you guys might remember a couple episodes. I can't remember. It all blurs together. But I was really desperately trying to make a connection. The show Utopia came up. I believe you are both fans, and I haven't seen it yet. And it's created by a guy named Dennis Kelly. And I was like, oh, my God, the name rings a bell. What else did he do? I'll tell you what else he did. He did this show on HBO called The Third Day. With Jude Law, that is in and of itself it was meant to be an interactive, communal kind of theater thing. It all takes place on this creepy island off of the coast of England, several hours from London. It has this like land bridge where the water, the tide rises and lowers, and that's the only way you can drive across. And once the tide comes in, you can't get off the island. But they were going to, it's divided into like these segments. There's summer, autumn, and winter. And autumn was initially going to be like a ticketed event where you could go wander around the island. All the actors would be there doing stuff. And you'd kind of just watch and like, you know, intermingle and whatever. And it's done in partnership with this company called Punch Drunk that did this thing called Sleep No More that I saw in New York. And it's been running for ages, but it's literally like you wear these masks and you're unleashed into this multi-level kind of space. And it's like Macbeth, but it's not. And it's like, there's satanic-y type stuff and crazy music and sound design. And like, it's like literally like living in a video game. It's one of the coolest experiences of my life. And that's where that connection was. So this all reminded me of Sleep No More and the kinds of interactive theater Punch Drunk's been doing forever. And that was the connection.
I think we're going to see much more augmented reality in the near future. I mean, the coolest part, I think, is gaming, but that is sort of, that is making the trend that is coming, that is inevitable, by the way, that is making that trend seem innocuous and fun, because these games are both innocuous and fun in general. But what happens when AR becomes so accepted as technology that walking around without glasses, allowing you to interact in an AR way, is the same thing as being blind? Just like children born today, 18 years from now, not knowing how to code, it's going to be kind of like not being literate. You know what I mean? There's there is a huge wave, a watershed moment of technology coming here.
Speaking of kids and watershed not being able to code yet, but oh yeah, okay, all right, buddy, hold on.
It's all staying. One second. Oh, this is delightful.
Nope, we're I'm going mute for a moment, boys. I'll be back, Auntie Donna.
So imagine a world where you are the person who forgets their contacts or their AR spectacles at home, and you're the only person who doesn't have it. You are going to see the rest of the world appearing to behave very strangely. I also want to point out, not to be too like cynical or gloom and doom, you know how these glasses are going to work, right? You know how these contacts are going to work. They're going to be free with ads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, like, you know, we talk about Black Mirror a ton on this show because it does such a good job of, like, kind of creating a plausible, not too distant future reality that, you know, with a healthy amount of satire. But I always think of that episode. I can't remember the number, but it's the one about the merits, 30 million merits or whatever.
Yeah.
Where in order to skip an ad, you have to pay money. And that's, and like your life is literally just like serving you ads like on screens, and it's like locked. Like when you close your eyes, it beeps at you and makes this like frequency that forces you to open your eyes. Yeah, I'm with you, dude.
I think it's on the way. Years ago, I did an experiment that didn't work out. Matt and Noel can assure you all, I do many experiments, and many of them do not work out with their intended results, but that's, you know, that's experimentation. Here's what I tried to do. I tried to count the number of ads I saw in a given day, defining a day as in the moment I wake up to the moment, I guess, to midnight or whatever. And from that span of time, I quickly realized there was no way to count. There was no way to count all of the ads unless I wasn't working, I wasn't focused on anything else, and I was hyper aware. And what's happening, and that's nothing. Soon you will not be able to count ads at all. It will simply be a brought to you by, it'll be, you know what it'll be? It'll be life brought to you by insert here.
You know? I have to disagree with you, Ben. No. I think it's going to be gamified. And I think you will know exactly how many ads you watched and how many, like the duration, how many you completed, how many you gave full attention to.
Maybe.
You're going to get grades and scales, and you'll get a crypto, like portion of a cryptocurrency based on the ads that you completed or, you know, portions of it. And then you'll be able to use that cryptocurrency for everything, anything and everything.
Counterpoint. Advertisers will pay more for hidden ads than that don't count and don't appear to be like it could get so crazy.
Secret ads, like achievement secret ads.
Yes.
Like you can unlock a certain special ad that gives you a full crypto coin.
Or what about this? What about this? Think about this. What if you are given the opportunity to go to an organization, go to a person, maybe a friend, maybe a loved one, maybe your spouse, and then to them recommend a thing. What if you paid directly to be that word of mouth person, to be that person who is hanging out across the street from the local, right? And like there's a little like halo, like you see in a side mission, an RPG hanging over this person, and you walk over to this person, your HUD says, you know, talk to them about how great the wings are at the local. And you walk up to them and you're like, hey, you know, my name's Jerome, and I got to tell you, if you like wings, you should go to the local. And then you're done. You don't have to say anything else. You just say that to a stranger. You keep walking. You get your crypto bits or your Ben Bucks or whatever, and then the world continues. It's merry dance to hell. Like, I can
and
see
then
this happening.
They come in your earpiece, and they say, mention the local on air during your podcast, and make sure all listeners are aware of their sun-dried tomato-smoked wings.
God damn it. It's not about the money, you guys. It's about sending a message and getting wings.
It's about the fragment of a crypto currency we got along the way. Speaking of which, and then also secret ads, I just recently took the toe dip into crypto, and I bought a handful of coins through a friend with a friend's recommendation, using this site called Nexo. It's like a crypto bank, and it has these like verification, like I'm not a bot things, where you have to pull this like puzzle piece on a slider into where the cutout of the puzzle piece goes, but the whole thing itself is an ad, but it's also like a captcha, but it's an ad.
It's pretty
beautiful integration at all levels.
Yeah. Everything is an ad. We have become ads. That's what's going to happen. Everybody listening, this is dystopian, and maybe we're being a bit extreme, but I think we're still firmly within the realm of plausibility here, not just possibility. With this, the thing about the AR games is that they're so cool. They're so neat. It's so surprising that there are not more, which means, to my mind, there are many more on the way or in development. The big question is, where does it go? How far does it go? You know what I mean?
I'll tell you how far. We're going to take a quick break from our ad services to hear a quick word from our host. But we'll be right back to the ad stream. That's what it's going to be.
Right. Exactly.
Because everybody wants the ads because they want the Bitcoin or whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Crypto bits, I like, because it sounds like a snack.
A cereal. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Like crypto bits.
Pretty good.
So this is our show. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Papa Caps. Thank you, Anonymous. What a ride, fellas. Folks, we hope that you enjoyed this. We hope to hear from you soon. If you want to take a page out of your fellow listener's book, you can contact us any number of ways.
You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Conspiracy Stuff. On Instagram, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show. Hey, why not head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the show and just pop a review in there. We don't mind. We would love it if it's positive, if you like what you're hearing. Otherwise, maybe don't. No, I'm just kidding. You be honest. It's totally
vote
fine.
Your
we
want to
hear. We want to hear what you think, and it does help the show. We don't have a Patreon. We don't have a way to really, give back in any way. But this is something you could do if you felt like it.
Should the spirit so move you? If you're not on board with social media, after all the creepy, increasingly true stuff we just told you, we totally get it. We have a phone number you can call. It's 1-833-STDWYTK. You have 3 minutes. They belong to you. The time is your own. Use it wisely. Let us know if it's okay to use your name and voice on the air. As we've said in the past, that 3 minutes can make you feel like you're really put on the spot. So it's kind of helpful if you have time. Just do a couple bullet points. This is why I want to tell the guys, here's my amazing pun related to conspiracies, and whatever. And then just go nuts with it. We can't wait to hear from you. If you hate phones, totally get it. There is another way to contact us. Always so far. And that is our good old-fashioned email address where we are.
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.